So my name is Andy Z. I am a co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org. And I'm not the only co-initiator here speaking with you tonight. We also have Sansara Taylor. And we have Cornel West. And we were just talking about how we started this almost 10 years ago. And if only people had listened then. So I want to say to all of you, everyone gathered here at the Advent Lutheran Church in New York City, and to everyone who will be watching this on live stream or on video, I want you to recognize the significance of your being a part of what we are doing tonight. And to recognize the responsibility that you are showing by being here, and that you're going to be asked to show over the next 3 weeks until November 5th. And then from there, it will be on and going forward. Don't underestimate the significance of your being here tonight. And by walking through this door to this gathering, you have shown you're caring for the future. You're caring for people other than yourselves. Your conviction that something different, something daring, and unprecedented must be done to stop this scourge on humanity that is Donald Trump and his whole fascist regime. Being here, you have shown the courage to hear about and then to be part of what must become the most unprecedented, nonviolent mobilization in the history of this country, mobilizing the power of the people to compel the removal of a regime that is imperiling the world. A mobilization that begins on November 5th with a single demand. The Trump fascist regime must go now. A demand that can and must unite people across a wide spectrum of backgrounds and beliefs. A demand that must be won for there to even be a future with the potential for a just world. And for there to even be a future for humanity, we have to recognize the existential danger that Trump and his anti-science regime poses, as perhaps it has already irrevocably accelerated the destruction of our planet. And this is on top of having a depraved lunatic tyrant with his finger on the nuclear trigger. Refuse Fascism's call for November 5th begins with these words which bear repeating tonight and every night and every day from now till he's gone. Fascism is not a looming threat. It is upon us now. Humanity's only hope is for the decent people of this country to rise in our millions. We cannot wait for a future or for rigged elections. We must drive the Trump fascist regime from power. Beginning on November 5th, the one-year anniversary of Trump's election, we're going to flood D.C. in nonviolent protest, surround the White House, surround the Capitol, surround the illegitimate packed Supreme Court. Come back again and again. Across the country, refuse to comply. Every person of conscience, millions of us together, grind the machinery of this fascist regime to a halt. And don't stop until Trump is removed from power. Tonight, our speakers will, I'm sure, bring alive the brutal truth that we are living under a fascist regime. They will make the case that this regime has momentum towards a destination that could be bolted into place very soon, should we fail to stop it. A country where there will be no rule of law, no right to say what you think, to protest what you despise and disagree with. Instead, we will be compelled to live in a dark ages society and swallow our convictions. The words this regime speaks matter for the deeds that they portend, for the hate that they spread into every corner of society, for the terror and the violence directed at people from the very top of the society down to the bottom of society, and for the reality that they are fast bringing into being. Words like these from Trump: they're destroying the blood of our country. They're not humans, they're animals. vermin, terrorists. This is the language of fascism, plain and simple. It's nothing else. That's what it is. And words from Stephen Miller, the chief vicious mover behind Trump. And I'm quoting this Nazi, and pay attention because this speaks to all of you and of you. He speaks of himself first and their regime. He says, "We will prevail over the forces of wickedness and evil. We stand for what is good, what is virtuous, and what is noble." He said, "And what do you have? You have nothing. You are nothing. You are wickedness. You are jealousy. You are envy. You are hatred. You are nothing. You can build nothing. You can produce nothing. You can create nothing," end quote. Think of the policy implications of all of that, and that is what is already happening, and that is what is coming. These are the ravings of immoral tyrants, and they are the words that a whole regime is determined to hammer into place. So note well that should we allow this regime to stay in power any longer, this will be our reality. To those who say, "I know, but I have to take care of me and my family and my own, let's wait and see, maybe we can vote this out," we have to say, cast away your delusions. Cast away your delusions. The future is now, and we must act to save it. That is why tonight we will be moved by the ethos, by the stand of refused fascism, that in the name of humanity, we refuse to live in a fascist America. Tonight, together, we will learn how to make that a reality. And we will learn and we will work together to get ready to drive this regime from power, going all out for No King's Day on Saturday. All out, every one of us, bringing many more of us. And then all out for November 5th, the beginning of the fall of the Trump fascist regime. But I do want to begin with a poem that was sent to me for this event by the actor David Strathairn. David Strathairn has brought conviction and depth to so many figures on the screen, including to Edward R. Murrow in the film Good Night and Good Luck, which was about the McCarthy era. And David R. Murrow said these words, which I, if you go on YouTube, you can hear Murrow say them himself, but actually how David does it is really quite memorable. Murrow said in his last broadcast, "Our history will be what we make it. If we go on as we are, then history will take its revenge and retribution will not limp in catching up with us," end quote. So David Strathairn sent this poem by Marge Piercy, whose work has been described, as he wanted me to introduce this, as Tikkun Olam, which is Hebrew, and in Judaic terms, it relates to her dedication to the dream of social change. And I think it is an apt poem for what we are doing tonight, leaving here with that determination to go all out for No King's Day and for all out for November 5th. So I'm going to read her poem, and then we're going to get to our first speaker. This is a poem by Marge Piercy called The Low Road. What can they do to you? Whatever they want. They can set you up. They can bust you. They can break your fingers. They can burn your brain with electricity, blur you with drugs till you can't walk, can't remember. They can take your child and wall up your lover. They can do anything you can't stop them from doing. How can you stop them? Alone, you can fight, you can refuse, you can take what revenge you can, but they roll over you. But two people fighting back to back can cut through a mob. Snake dancing file can break a cordon. An army can meet an army. Two people can keep each other sane, give you support, conviction, love, massage, hope, and sex. Three people are a delegation, a committee, a wedge. With four people, you can play bridge and start an organization. With six, you can rent a whole house, eat pie for dinner with no seconds, and hold a fundraising party. A dozen makes a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity in your own newsletter. 10,000 power in your own paper. 100,000 your own media. And 10 million your own country. It goes on one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do. Again, and they said no. It starts when you say we. And I know who you mean. Each day you mean one more. So let's become not just one more, but millions more. So with that, I want to bring to the podium our host, the leader of this church, Pastor Danielle, who graciously and boldly has welcomed us to be here this evening.
When you're saying things that are true, and when there's a message that needs to get out there, it's amazing how many little obstacles show up along the way. And it's very easy to get discouraged, whether it be a sound system or a scheduling conflict or maybe somebody who is telling you it's not worth the time. But do you stop? No. Do you continue to put one foot in front of the other? Do you continue to lead with love? In a world where everyone is being dehumanized, in a world where people are pointing fingers and the divide is greater than ever, we need each other desperately. We need each other. This is not a matter of, well, maybe if I have the time. We need each other. We need to see each other, to look one another in the eye and see the divine spark in each other, the worth in each other, the value of each other, and then to dismantle and build out systems that are built on the assumption that every person is of value. Every person is of value. When we forget we belong to each other, we all lose. And so I want to thank you for being here tonight at Advent, at Refuse Fascism. I want to thank you for showing up for one another. I want to thank you in the face of hate and discrimination and oppression and lies that you are choosing love, that you are choosing to be connected. I want to thank you because you give me hope. Because there are many days that I wake up and think, I'm just going to turn over. There are too many obstacles. I don't even want to get out of bed. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling. So I am so thankful that you are here. I hope this event tonight gives you courage. I hope that it gives you hope. I hope that it invites you to continue to find that place, that energy, that conviction to continue to put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. Now, because you're meeting in a church and because you're sitting here for a while, I'm going to make you sing. Because that's the kind of energy we need right now, something a little bit bigger. So, if you'll repeat after me, you gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other. Oh, this is weak. Weak! Come on, people. You know what we're up against? Let's try again. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. I know you're scared, and I'm scared too. But here I am, right next to you. Because you gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. Amen. Thank you all for being here tonight. We are so glad. Keep showing up.
All right, so now we're going to get to the heart of our program, and then we're going to have some organizing to do. Because the point here is to get oriented to do something. And so we're going to hear from Sansara Taylor and Cornel West, two of the co-initiators of Refuse Fascism. And first, I'm going to bring up my sister, not really, but somebody I feel who's a sister, who has traveled this country over the last weeks and months, bringing the message of Refuse Fascism and of the need for a very, very broad coalition of people to demand that this regime be removed from power. Sansara is a longtime revolutionary and activist. She led a tremendous struggle to try to prevent the overturning of Roe versus Wade, mobilizing tens of thousands of young people across this country. And today she's here to mobilize all of us, to get us ready for the greatest struggle in the history of this country since the Civil War. Well, join me in welcoming Sansara Taylor.
Okay, beautiful people, sisters and brothers, I'm so happy to see you. I'm really happy. People we met on the street on the way down, welcome. We are in really intense times, really dangerous times. So I want to start just a little more than 2 weeks ago, September 30th. It was a Tuesday. I want to start at 1 a.m. to be specific. All the children were asleep in their beds, all the adults too, or most of them. And then suddenly there was a noise. Not really a noise, it was a roar. And all of a sudden the building itself was shaking, all the buildings. People, the air was thumping. Children were jolted awake, they were screaming. People looked outside and there were Black Hawk military helicopters pounding the air, thump, thump, thump. Everything was moving. Not just the building targeted, but the neighboring buildings. People were screaming, disoriented, dead of night, and men in military gear are rappelling off the Black Hawk helicopters. From the ground, tanks are pouring out other men masked in military gear, climbing over fences, busting down doors, and one floor after the next in this residential building, flashbang grenades, boom, 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 one after the other, every floor. And then everybody in these buildings were dragged out, zip-tied. Now, if this happened anywhere in the world against civilians, it would be an atrocity. It would be unacceptable. But this was not a scene from Iraq or Afghanistan, as unacceptable as that would be. This was a residential neighborhood next to two schools. In the middle of Chicago, South Shore. This happened on US soil just 2 weeks ago. And then all the adults were dragged out. They were cuffed, they were zip-tied, they were separated by race. Latinos zip-tied together over here, Black people zip-tied over there. Children zip-tied, half of them half-dressed and naked, screaming. One of the Black neighbors from across the street came out. He said this scene reminded him of slave coffles. You know, the trains of Black people chained together, literally, to be dragged and force-marched from one plantation to another. This is what it means, make America great again. With all the white supremacy, all the hatred of immigrants, all the horror and depravity that is invoked by that. Make America great again. This is happening. Another Black resident came out and she saw these children wailing. And she looked at the ICE agents and she asked them, she said, "Where is your humanity?" And you know what one of them shot back to her? I'm in a church, so I won't say it fully. He said, "F them kids." That's what he said, F them kids. Think about that. This is the political descendant, the voice of the political descendants of the people in this country who would gather, bring their children and their packed lunches for celebration-like atmosphere to watch lynchings. This is the dead hand of the Confederacy and slavery coming back, make America great again. This is fascism. As we say in our call for the fall of the Trump fascist regime right here, and Andy quoted this before me, I'm going to say it again, fascism is not a looming threat. It is upon us now. This is fascism. So tonight, and this is just one of the examples, already a month ago, if I'd told you or somebody had told you there was going to be a military-style raid in a residential neighborhood, it would have been unthinkable. And here we are 2 weeks later, and the regime has moved on to its next outrages. Just yesterday, they had skirmishes and clashes in Chicago where federal agents pepper sprayed and tear gassed, not just protesters, but Chicago police. Today, the Supreme Court is actively contemplating further gutting the Voting Rights Act. Each day, it's dizzying the pace. So tonight, I'm going to ask you the same question that that black woman asked the ICE agents in the South Shore of Chicago. I'm going to ask you, where is your humanity? This is a question all of us are going to have to answer, not just once, but again and again, as we are living in truly unprecedented times. And we're going to have to answer this question, what is the measure of our humanity, not just by how we treat those who are dearest to us. It's quite possible that ICE agent is a doting father to his own children. The measure of our humanity is not just how we treat those dearest to us, but by what we do, how we fight for those we've never met, and for the future itself. So again, from this call for the fall of the Trump fascist regime, humanity's only hope is for the decent people of this country to rise in our millions. We cannot wait for future and failed and rigged elections. We must drive the Trump fascist regime from power. Beginning November 5th, the one-year anniversary of Trump's election, flood D.C. in nonviolent protest, surround the White House, surround the Capitol, surround the illegitimate fascist-packed Supreme Court, come back again and again. Across the country, refuse to comply. Every person of conscience, millions of us together, grind the machinery of this fascist regime to a halt and do not stop until Trump is removed from power. Do not stop until Trump is removed. Why is that so essential? Why do we say that? It is because fascism is not a curse word. It has real meaning. Fascism is a qualitative change in the form of rule. Fascism means no due process, no rights or protections. Fascism means dehumanizing and demonizing and disappearing one group after another. In this country, with its historical development, fascism means aggressive, open white supremacy. It means genocidal hatred of immigrants and all things foreign. It means revenge against women for ever having gotten out of their place. It means erasure of trans people and LGBT rights. It means backing war crimes and crimes against humanity, like in Gaza. And it means the full-scale trampling of science and reason and the planet itself. Fascism is a machine of destruction. If it is not defeated, it devours everything. And the most essential thing to understand about fascism is there is no living with it. There is no waiting it out. There is no hoping it goes away. There is no 10 tips for surviving it. The lesson of fascism is that if it is not defeated, if it is not driven from power, it will carry out greater and greater atrocities, and it will shut down any space for anybody to meaningfully oppose it, from the streets rising up or even from within the halls of power. And this is what we see happening every day. Consider this. When Charlie Kirk was assassinated, we immediately came out and made clear this was a horribly wrong thing, and no one should celebrate or cheer it. But what did Trump and the MAGA regime do? They immediately came out and seized on this horrific assassination to double down and triple down on ruthlessly going after anybody they perceived as enemies. Some within MAGA openly called Charlie Kirk's assassination their Reichstag fire. Now, for those of you who don't know, in 1933, shortly after Hitler came to power, the main government building in Germany, the Reichstag, was set on fire. This is what they're talking about, the Reichstag fire. Now, historians have debated who actually set the fire. Many believe the Nazis did it themselves. But what is undisputed, what is clear fact, and what is the most salient and important lesson to draw from this is the Nazis seized on this fire to declare emergency powers. They criminalized and banned all opposition parties. They shut down the free press. They went after and hunted down and tortured and rounded up communists. This was the beginning of the concentration camps. This was a major leap down the trajectory that led to the towering crime in all of human history of the Holocaust of 6 million Jews and the mass murder of Roma people, disabled people, gay people, and others. The revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, the architect of the new communism, put out a message shortly after this, and I want to quote from it. He said, quote, "In declaring that this was their Reichstag fire, these Trump MAGA forces are openly identifying with the Nazis, openly proclaiming that they are indeed fascists," end quote. And this is exactly what we see playing out. They are seizing on this, like their Reichstag fire. Just in recent days, Donald Trump designated Antifa, an intentionally vague catch-all category, as a domestic terrorist organization. And now, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and that fascist from Minnesota, Tom Emmer, have come out and said all of the millions of protesters who'll be out in the streets for No King's Day are terrorists. They're Antifa. And yesterday, Pam Bondi goes on Fox News, and you know what she said? She said, "We are going to treat Antifa the same way Trump is treating those he proclaimed were narco-terrorists, dropping bombs on them without evidence, without trial, without due process." This is what she said. When these fascists speak, we need to believe them. What else happened since this Reichstag fire? Trump and Hegseth gathered all the military brass from all over the world and lectured them and told them that they are going to be unleashed against the enemy within. And now the regime has illegitimately gone after and indicted James Comey, Letitia James. They had a handpicked prosecutor Donald Trump put in place, spent months investigating them, came back and said there's no legitimate basis to indict either of these people. He fired that one, put in another one. Now they're indicted. Meanwhile, he's threatened Governor Pritzker of Illinois, the mayor, Brandon Johnson of Chicago, with arrest. They are not stopping. And then there's ICE. Lawless, unidentifiable, unaccountable, loyal only to Trump, with a budget bigger than most of the world's militaries. F those kids. Think about that. This is fascism, and it does not get better with time. It only gets worse unless and until this regime is driven from power. Here again, from the call that we put out, "The elections are way too late. Besides, no honest person can expect the tyrant who instigated and then pardoned the January 6th insurrectionists to respect an election he loses." This is why we need to go all out for No King's Day and be in the streets this Saturday. And we need to double down on being out there and getting everybody we know out there, especially now that it's been threatened. We cannot concede to these fascist threats and intimidation. By coming out, we show the world that the majority in this country hates what Trump is doing. He does not have our consent. By coming out, we remind ourselves and each other of our strength, and we give courage to those who are afraid. And this matters.
But it is also not enough. And you're here because you know this. This is why we also need to get down to DC on November 5th to raise the demand. The Trump fascist regime must go now. And to kick off a nonviolent struggle of millions and tens of millions that rises again and again and does not stop until we create the level of profound political crisis across this country so that Trump cannot govern this country, cannot impose his fascist program, and cannot even hold on to the reins of power. This and nothing less is what we must do. November 5th is 3 weeks from today. It's a Wednesday. It's a weekday. It's intended to be disruptive. It is also the one-year anniversary of Trump's election. We need to be there to say no election, fair or fraudulent, justifies or legitimates a fascist America. Trump must go. So I want to speak to the question, which I get asked, and you'll get asked if you go out and spread this movement, is it really possible to drive out this regime? And I want to say, absolutely, it is possible. Now, Andy told you before, my name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, together with Andy, with my dear brother Cornel West, who you'll hear from soon, and with others. And we initiated this organization back in 2016. We recognize the danger of Trump, and this is a movement that unites people from many diverse political and philosophical perspectives, different walks of life, different outlooks. But I want to say I come to this movement personally as a proud follower of the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, who, as I mentioned, is the architect of the new communism, a whole new framework of human emancipation, and I urge you to learn about it. But tonight what I want to highlight is this revolutionary leader, as Cornel was emphasizing to me before this program, has been ahead of the curve for 30 years in recognizing and warning of the rise of fascism in this country and of giving direction for how it could be defeated. And it's important, if people had listened to him, instead of dismissing him as alarmist or dismissing him because of outright anti-communist prejudices, we would likely not be in such a dangerous situation tonight. But my point in saying this is not to dwell in the past, but to learn from it. So I want to highlight tonight that Bob Avakian recently put out a major message called "The Time is Urgently Upon Us Now to Drive Out the Trump Fascist Regime." And in it, he speaks to why and how it actually is possible to drive this regime out. And you can find this message, and I urge you to, at Bob Avakian Official on Substack. And I'm going to draw from some of his insights in the points I'm about to make. I want to say it's possible to drive this regime from power, not only because tens of millions of us reject and hate everything Trump is doing. That matters. Without that, we would have no chance. But I will tell you, and history shows, that just because you have the majority on your side does not mean you always win. The reason it's possible to drive this regime out is both because of the millions who hate this if we act, but also because this society is deeply, deeply divided. It is split right down the middle. And this is true not just in the population broadly, it is true among every single institution in this society. Every civil institution, every university board, every law firm, every community organization, and every part of the ruling institutions as well. Right up to the leading levels of society and the armed forces of repression and enforcement. There are people, yes, they have a different perspective on this system than I do as a revolutionary, but there are people from the very different perspective than me who are horrified right within the halls of power at the lawlessness of Trump, at the way he is shredding the Constitution, at the way he is disrupting and disfiguring what they see as their great American experiment in democracy. And these people have done a lot of things to try to slow Trump down, and they're deeply opposed to him. But right now, they're on the defensive. Right now, their efforts are overwhelmed. And right now, even when they have some momentary success, they are overwhelmed as Trump barrels ahead. But they could play a major role in bringing about the removal of Trump. But they will not do this unless and until there is the kind of political earthquake from below that we are calling for and initiating with this November 5th movement to drive Trump from power. If there was this millions in the streets, not just once, but again and again, concentrated in D.C., coming back at the seat of power, this could compel shifts and major realignments within the ruling institutions. It could compel and enable those in a position to do so to play a crucial role in bringing about Trump's removal from power. It is actually possible, but the time is upon us now. So some people say, and I've heard this as I've traveled around the country, what good would it be to get rid of Trump if you still have Vance, Miller, and the rest of them in power? To this I say, this is a failure of scientific imagination. Just picture what it would be if you had tens of millions rising up, repudiating, refusing to comply, causing such a political crisis in this country that we bring about the removal of Trump. A political upsurge and crisis like that could lead to the fall of many more than just Trump. And one thing that is sure is whoever comes in behind Trump would face an aroused and awakened and politicized population. And so we, A, would not be living under fascism, and B, would be in a much better position to fight forward. Some people say November 5th is too soon. They say push it back to January or February. We are hearing this. No. No, not only because we don't have time for that, Trump is moving to lock in fascism now, he has to be stopped now, but this is also wrong because right now is when millions are being jolted and shocked and disturbed from their slumber. Right now is when people need to be moved. And if we don't move them now, it's not going to be easier to move them later. If we wait, even more of these crimes will be normalized and the stakes and the terror of rising up will be greater. Now is the time. Some people have told us you can't do this without Indivisible and other major national organizations. To this, I say we've invited them, and we are still extending the invitation. Some of their members are here with us tonight and working with us around the country, and this is important. And it would be better if they joined us officially. But we cannot let what others are not ready to do stop us from doing what really must be done. So I ask you to join again in the next 3 weeks to double down in helping reach the people that we could reach better if other organizations were with us. Be part of the engine to get the broad masses of people and work with us to go to the leaders of these other groups and to their members and win them to take this up, because the truth is the future they want, the future I want, the future you want, even if there's differences, any of these futures are not possible if Trump remains in power. And then there are those who say, but November 4th is election day, and this is very high stakes. Well, I'm not here to tell you what to do on November 4th, but I am here to say, number one, that everybody should stand against the fascist threats against Mamdani by Donald Trump to deport him, the fascist threats against New York City if he wins. And I'm here to tell you that no matter who is in power, no matter how much they stand up to Trump, there is no such thing as Trump-proofing a city or a state. We are seeing this proven in Chicago and California right now. So do what you feel moved to do on November 4th, and then get on the bus November 5th and come to D.C. to help drive this regime from power. This is the most decisive thing. This is what history will pivot on. So I want to conclude by saying that most people, most generations, do not live through times as consequential as these. Most don't. But we look back on the generations that lived through historic turning points. And while making clear that what we are calling for right now is nonviolent, I also want to be clear that what we are facing is every bit as consequential as the generation that faced the Civil War and the epic battle to abolish slavery. And what we are facing right now is every bit as consequential as the generation that faced the rise of Hitler in Nazi Germany. And we look back at those generations and we celebrate the heroism and the courage of one and how they changed the world for the better. And we look with unforgivable shame upon the other for their legacy and the cost, the human cost that is still being felt. And future generations are going to look back at us in a similar light. And each of us are going to have to answer, how do we measure up? To echo the woman's question in the South Shore of Chicago, we are going to have to answer, what is the measure of our humanity? And we are going to have to answer this not just with private convictions and what we said to our friends or on Facebook. We are going to have to answer this with the courage that we show in public, with the demonstrable action we take together, and by our determination to act and move others to act in the only way that measures up to this turning point in history, which is by bringing forward millions to stand up and say, we refuse to accept a fascist America in the name of humanity. This fascist regime must go. Beginning November 5th, beginning November 5th in DC and going forward from there. So change your life, throw all in, take a leave if you can, come to DC early if you can, throw in here in New York City in whatever way you can. This will be the most important thing, the most meaningful thing you can do with the next 3 weeks of your life. It may be the most meaningful thing you have the opportunity to do in your entire life. And no matter what, it will be the highest expression of your humanity and the biggest gift that you can give to humanity all over the world and to the future itself. So thank you.
I'm here to, you know, it'd be a cliche to say to introduce somebody who doesn't need an introduction. So then why am I here? Because of the great admiration and love I have for Cornel West. We've stood together in this particular struggle for the last 10 years, and in struggles before that. And Cornel, as he says often about others, but he really fits the definition of a long distance runner for justice. So Cornel.
My dear brother Andy, I thank you for those kind words. And I must say, didn't our magnificent sister Sansara tell the truth with passion and insight? Thank you so very much. Oh, Lord. I'm sitting next to my dear brother Carl Dix. Stand up, Brother Carl. Just stand up. He's a humble brother. Yes. Lord. Where's my dear Sister Lavette? Where's Sister Lavette? Stand up, Sister Lavette. Stand up, and they can see how beautiful with all your grace and dignity. Give it up for our dear sister. Brother Andy and Sister Sansara and Brother Carl. My dear sister Lavette, we've been at this now for many, many years. They come from a very rich tradition, revolutionary communism. This is the 59th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party on the chocolate side of Oakland, California. That's revolutionary communism, too. I'm not an ism kind of brother. I'm a revolutionary Christian. I'm concerned about how deep is your love for the people. Are you willing to tell the truth about suffering? Because the condition of suffering is to allow poor and working people's suffering to be made visible so that we can straighten up our backs and change the world. If you're a revolutionary Jew, if you're a revolutionary Buddhist, if you're a revolutionary Lutheran, if you're a revolutionary Baptist, if you're a revolutionary Hindu and anti-caste, if you're a revolutionary atheist and an agnostic, then this movement is for you. Yes, because we're talking about solidarity, and it cuts across the board. Now, I come from a tradition of black people, and I'm very explicit about that, because you're talking about my mama and my daddy. You're talking about Shiloh Baptist Church. You're talking about Fannie Lou Hamer and Harriet Tubman and Martin King and Frederick Douglass and Gil Scott-Heron. I haven't even got to Nina Simone yet. These are not just names. These are human beings who decided to live lives of integrity and honesty and decency and tell the truth from the vantage point of oppressed peoples, whether they be wrestling with genocide in Gaza, whether they be wrestling with ICE hunting them down and snatching their precious members of their family, whether they're wrestling with unbelievable predatory capitalist forces in Brazil. It's a global affair, but it's local in how we act and how we come together. Solidarity must be our theme. Solidarity must be our slogan. We need coalition now more than ever, but it's got to be rooted in the best of you and the best of the traditions that have shaped you. That's our challenge. Because let us be very, very clear that one of the major obstacles of our day is not just the predatory greed of big money of Wall Street and Silicon Valley. It's not just the weaponized hatred, the old and new forms of white supremacy coming at black people and indigenous people and brown new immigrants. It's not that old style and new style patriarchy that loses sight of the vast majority of human beings who are women, or loses sight of precious gays and trans and lesbian sisters. No, that's in place. But our problem is that we got too many folk in the middle who are lukewarm. Oh, yes, we got too many bystanders and spectators who don't want to become participants, who don't want to take a risk and end up thinking they could make it through by being well-adjusted to injustice and well-adapted to indifference. And I can hear Rabbi Heschel saying, indifference, the evil's more insidious than evil itself. And it's the indifference, it's the callousness, it's remaining spectator and bystander and thinking all you do is just watch it on television rather than show up November the 5th and be there and put your body where your virtues are, put your body where your values are, put your body where your convictions are, put your body where your commitments are. Oh, that's what we need. More than anything else. I saw my dear sister, Pastor Danielle. Where is she? Where is she? Is she still here? Where is she? She's so humble. Raise your hand, my dear sister. Raise your hand. Give it up for my dear sister. There she is. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. There she is. Stepping in the name of love, that this grand institution, this consecrated space of Advent, Lutheran Church, is part of the tradition of the inimitable Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Now, you all know Dietrich Bonhoeffer led the resistance against a gangster named Hitler. But he was also a student of my own institution of Union Theological Seminary in 1930 and 1931. And when he arrived in New York City, he could already feel fascism escalating. He could see fascism beginning to expand. And he came to America right after the Wall Street crash, right at the beginning of depression. He could see the Jim Crow and the Jane Crow. He could see the patriarchy. He could see the class struggle taking place. And what did he do? He looked around and he said, I think I feel more at home in Abyssinian Baptist Church with a pastor named Adam Clayton Powell Sr., who was the father of Adam Clayton Powell Jr. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer became the only vanilla member of that chocolate church. Solidarity. And he was not some kind of white ally just trying to act as if he could spend a little time here or there. No, no. He was like Bill Evans in Miles Davis's quintet, who was a vanilla brother. And when Miles said, Train, play your solo, Train would play a beautiful solo. Then he'd say, Evans, play your solo. He didn't say, white ally, play your solo. No, he's in the band. He's in solidarity. He's in a context of struggle together, because as a human being, he's been respected. He's earned his role. He's earned his function. That's what we need. We got to be in the same band. We've got to be in the same context of struggle. And that's what Dietrich Bonhoeffer was able to do. When he stepped to the pulpit of 137th Street and looked at all of those beautiful black people, and they looked at this white brother from Germany, and they said, we in the same band, because we struggling together. And we in the same foxhole, which means that we sacrifice together, we risk together, we laugh together. We can disagree in various ways, but in the end, we willing to die together. And when Bonhoeffer went back to Germany, what did he do? He created that underground seminary, and he made all of those students require listening to those spirituals that those geniuses on the barbaric white supremacist plantations created. Swing low, sweet chariot. Steal away. Those were the songs that Bonhoeffer had his anti-fascist coalition in gangster Hitler's Nazi Germany. Solidarity, international solidarity. And what else would he say? My dear sister knows the story. Lutheran pastor, Sister Danielle, Lutheran pastor, Brother Dietrich. Same tradition. But most of the churches had accommodated to Hitler, just like now. You see, most Christians these days, you better watch yourself. Accommodating themselves, well-adjusted to injustice. Oh, not Bonhoeffer, not Pastor Danielle, not Advent Lutheran. Not at all. But then even with the confessing church, when things got tough, when Hitler forced them to decide, they signed the oath to Hitler anyway. And Bonhoeffer said, oh my God, I thought I had at least a Christian minority. It's smaller than I thought. And he would begin every morning. He would say, if you cannot hear the cries of Jews in concentration camps, then don't sing Gregorian chants in this church. Yes, that's the kind of truth-telling we need. That's the kind of justice-seeking we need. That's the kind of prophetic witness we need, not because we're self-righteous or orthodox or dogmatic in creed and ideology. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about deed. I'm talking about actions. I'm talking about praxis. I'm talking about consistency and constancy in trying to be, in the language of John Coltrane, a force for good, which means we create an anti-fascist coalition that cuts across the grain. That's what we're talking about tonight. And yes, Bonhoeffer was executed just a few weeks before the end of the war. He was willing to die. No doubt about that. And some of us will die. We got gangsters in the White House. We got thugs in the White House. But they are not the cause. They are the symptom. There's larger forces and factors at work. So it's not all about just Trump. It's about Trump himself being part of a fascist movement in this country that goes back 400 years. That's what Malcolm meant when he said that chickens come home to roost. No nation, no empire can survive based on the efficacy of lies that hide your crimes. You begin with genocide, you begin with slavery, you begin with patriarchy, you begin with class subordination, and either you generate the best of humanity so that those in the country, in the empire, can create moments of interruption so that the best of who we are with all of our love and care and compassion and empathy is manifest, or we lose it and the worst of humanity comes through all of that organized greed, all of that weaponized hatred, all of that routinized indifference, all of that cowardliness, all of that sense of thinking that somehow is not going to make it to your house. Well, I come from a black people. Well, Trump is not new, and he's not news. That fascism is not new, and it's not news. That vicious forms of white supremacy and male supremacy are not new. Harriet Tubman wouldn't be surprised. Malcolm wouldn't be surprised. Du Bois wouldn't be surprised. Martin Luther King Jr. said what? America, I can see the curtain being brought down on your empire if you don't come to terms with poverty and racism and militarism and materialism around the world, in the Middle East, in Asia, in Latin America, and in the United States. So all of those bombs that you dropped over there will have effects here, and sooner or later, the very militarism that takes place there will become more visible and more discernible here. Well, you know what? Here we are. Here we are. And the question is always, what we gonna do? How do we create solidarity with each other? How do we learn how to disagree when we disagree, but do it in such a way that is still enhancing and empowering in our agreement? Because what we do agree on is we're anti-fascist across the board. We're anti-racist across the board. We're anti-sexist across the board. Some of us are anti-capitalists. That's all right if we got some liberals and some neoliberals and social democrats in the coalition. That's fine. We'll just have some fascinating arguments in jail together. But right now, we got to be anti-fascist. When you look at the ways in which institutions have caved in, Columbia University, shame on you. Shame. Wall Street law firm, shame on you. Capitulating. We could go on and on and on and on. And my God, we haven't even got to professional managerial class in this nation. Professors running around acting as if they have such deep commitments to truth and the sacredness of universities, and they see 13 universities demolished in Gaza and hardly say a mumbling word. All the talk about journalism, how sacred free press is, and 207 journalists in Gaza are murdered, and they hardly say a mumbling word. All these medical doctors running around talking about their Hippocratic oath and how sacred human bodies are. 95% of the hospitals demolished. Where's the words from the doctors? That's what anti-fascist struggle is about, not trashing people, but exposing their cowardliness and hypocrisy and trying to convince them to be more courageous and truth-telling. That's our challenge. That is our challenge. And let us never, ever, ever get discouraged. Let us be encouraged. Because as a black man in America, I'm never surprised by any evil. Just like I'm never paralyzed by any despair. I'm a blues man. And the blues is not pessimistic or optimistic. The blues is not about paralysis, and it's certainly not about being overwhelmed by evil. No. The blues generates prisoners of hope who are truth tellers about ourselves, about our society, and the world. But you always end up with a sound and a smile and style and organizing and some way of bringing people together. That's not just music. That's a way of life. That's a mode of being in the world, and it has everything to do with love, the love supreme of John Coltrane, the love train of the OJs, that love in need of love of Stevie Wonder. Those are just not songs. Oh, Jimi Hendrix too, out of Seattle. Oh, we got a long list, my brother. Shoot, I'll start talking about Gerald Levert. We'd be here all night, but that's not the point. We here to make sure we come together and sustain this anti-fascist coalition. Let us continue to struggle together and work together. God bless you. Stay strong.